Well, I'm accustomed to a smooth ride. Or maybe I'm a dog who's lost but it's bad. I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep through the night. So people say lies, lies, lies. But I say why? Why deny the obvious, child? Why deny the obvious, child? And then remembering a road sign, I'm remembering a girl when I was young. And we said, these songs are true, these days are ours, these tears are free. The cross is in the ballpark, and the cross is in the ballpark. We had a lot of fun, had a lot of money. We had a little son we thought we'd call him Sonny. Sonny gets married and moves away. Sonny got a baby and moves away. Sonny gets sunnier day by day, by day, by day. Well, I've been waking up at sunrise. I've been following the light across my room. I watch the night receding in my day. Some people say the sky is just the sky, but I say, why deny the obvious, child? Why deny the obvious, child? Sonny sits by his window and thinks to himself, how it's strange that some rooms are like cages. Sonny's yearbook from high school is down from the shelf, and he idly thumbs through the pages. Some have died, some have fled from themselves, or struggle from here to get there. Sonny wanders beyond his interior walls, runs his hands through his thinning brown hair. Well, I'm accustomed to a smoother ride. Or maybe I'm a dog who's lost in spite. I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep the night. Some people say a lie is just a lie, but I say the cross is in the ballpark. Why deny the obvious, child?
This is Coral Reef, and we've got Mike Drew on the line. How are you doing, Mike?
Greetings and salutations from New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm doing good. How you doing?
Yeah, I missed you last week. Yeah, I'm doing good.
Did?
It's a rainy day. Santa Cruz, how can we be better? It's a
great day.
Day to have rain, because it's my show.
This is good that you got rain. We're close to snow over here. It's really bizarre. It's like 45 degrees in New Orleans, which is really cold.
Okay, trade you.
For this time of year, yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, I don't think the weather, by and large, is going to cooperate with any trades about now. It's its own thing, yeah.
I wake up. Well, it's not quite that early there. I feel like I had to wake up, though. I wanted to get back to our discussion that I inadvertently discarded a couple, 3 weeks back. But You know, so I want to hear some of the new writings you've done, because it's on this line of free speech and free expression. Like we used to do in Santa Cruz, we had a group that did that. And as usual, that's not happening as much anymore for musicians downtown. They're also getting pigeonholed. They're making these little dots and squares and trying to put people in boxes, like square boxes. I think they should connect the dots and make something else. But, you know, could have a TV show live from streets of Santa Cruz. Russia Today shows repression of First Amendment rights, live and new.
I got you, I looked through my book the other day, The Diabolical Seas, which I had published last year, a book of poetry, and I looked for some things that were pertinent. I found two or three, if your listeners wouldn't mind me doing a reading via.
And what is the name of that poem that's going to be read?
The first one I think I'll pick out is just kind of what you were saying in terms of how we're being positioned. And it is called Forward, as in forward. Let me read this. We plod along in a stupor born of apathy, like a workhorse gifted with two black blinders, one for each eye, peripheral hindrances barring distractions, subversive actions, or any unforeseen coming attraction. This benign management, a positive alternative to any misgivings, misleading emotions, or other misguided misinformation. Heading in the wrong direction, never a good thing. Propelled and thus compelled ever onward, destined to clip-clop through the cobbled streets of homeland security, overseas interests, interstate commerce, and our very own right to work indentured servitude. Giddy up now. Off we go. Onward, with the flick of a whip, must remember purpose, the standing of our stations, and above all, must respect authority, must go when told to do so, must stop when told to do so. So who's in charge? Who will be flogging the old gray mare today? And why all the hurry? It's as if we'll miss the market, and in doing so, the promise of a handful of feed in a cold bed of damp hay. It's as if at the end of the rainbow we could be denied, forgotten, or somehow misplaced in the fast and furious lives of those who would attend to our daily needs. We could become expendable. Even worse, we could become obsolete. For years, it all may seem so easy. Life can seem too easy. A job can seem too easy. People and the weather, passive and pleasant, with football franchises and political parties, the subject of the occasional office pool. This is the essence of the mundane, the perpetual purpose of the propaganda, the pre-programming, the subservient social broadcasting system. Are you tuned in? Are you truly listening? The wind of routine synchronizes clocks and lives alike. Get to your station, keep to your schedule, and then it's better not complain when they demand so much. Don't slow down, speed up. Quit if you don't like it. Leave your card at the gate if you've had enough. Don't look back. Never look sideways. And whatever you do, don't look up. The master marks his command with a sharp whistle, a dull buzz, and a sting on the ear. Beasts of burden we are, ever pulling against our vocational yokes. Tyranny cleverly concealed behind a $30 raise in Social Security benefits and the granting of another $1,500 in credit at the bank. Otherwise, there is little choice in the matter. Fitted to wood, iron rings, and leather tack, straps cinched tight across chest, gut, rump, and back, bit firmly between the teeth, there seems to be no place to go but forward.
Forward march.
Yes. Forward march. That's exactly right. We have become ingrained in our routines, to the degree that if we didn't have these routines, we would be lost. We would be afraid more so than we are now. Routines is something that's it's a very good psychological tool to put people into, because you keep them paced at a certain pace and doing a certain thing that you want them to be doing, and they feel comfortable in that, even if it's a weird routine, even if it's a routine that changes daylight hours and everything else stays the same. You know, it changes where the sun is in the sky, and everything else remains the same. People, you know, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, changing the daylight savings time and all that sort of thing, when the clock changes and it becomes really dark really quick. Well, they did that because they wanted people up early to work the farms and to work the factories. They didn't want them to have to work late at nighttime in the dark. And so they just switched the times up so it became early light. Well, it's not early light, it's just the switching of the times. It's a trick.
Well, they didn't do that 100 years ago, did they? But what did they do for psychological tools?
Well, they didn't. Pretty much people worked off the land, and they worked off a natural time clock and whatever it took to survive. At one point in time, mankind was very, very subsistence-oriented, had a mind for what he needed to get done in a reasonable amount of time to feed his family, whether it was growing food or whether it was hunting for food or whatever. There was certainly not so much of the routine, because you would follow, you know, the seasons would change and you'd have to do different things during the different seasons, and so it was more spontaneous. It was much more spontaneous. We were free thinking at that particular point in time, even though, you know, it was scratching out of survival, and that's never an easy thing. It still was more, man used his mind more for adapting, and now we don't adapt. We let the technology take over our ingenious in terms of needing to get things done at different times with certain things, you know, our communication systems and all that sort of thing, the light that we have in our house, the electricity that runs our kitchens and so on and so forth, that all is taking away from our need to get out there and do certain things at certain times of day and so on and so forth. Anyway, it's like it's changed everything. The technology has changed everything, to the degree that we are dependent on the technology. That's what's happening. That dependence is the scary part.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Mike Tarrou, social commentator. technology, that's what we're talking about through using.
And even that's a very fragile thing. We certainly have figured out how to take shortcuts in getting things done, and the computers and all that seem to be the wave of the future, even down to the fact that we're holding these computers in our hands now, and we call them smartphones. We're kind of bound to these things. It's going to tell us what the weather is and how to dress, and you know where our friends are hanging out and what's the best restaurant to eat at, but there's people behind these computers too, though, that are kind of feeding us this information, which is kind of strange. But even that, like I say, we don't realize that there's a very, very fragile kind of thing, and that there's actually a war going on right now, and we are in the midst of this thing between us and Russia and China and several other places, where these so-called cyber hackers are hiding out, and they're given the means to hack into programs and alter them or destroy them or get information out of them, and so this is happening. There's another poem that I put in this book, Diabolical Seas, which I had published last in November of last year. It's been about a year now. Diabolical Sea is being a collection of my poetry. And this one is called Cyber War, Preemptive Strike Imminence.
Okay.
And actually, Cyber War is already on. It's already happening. Okay, so it starts out with a small poem and then goes to the big poem. The first poem is, while tucked in bed, shades pulled down, the bombs will fall without a sound. Be gone the power, yes, every spark, to leave us weeping in the dark. And then here's the main poem. No unsheathed blade to draw the blood. No charging enemy. It is our symbiotic nature that has brought us to our knees. We drank deep our information, served up from poisoned streams, having never learned our lessons, the villains to their deeds. Man will have his master, pledge oaths of servitude, this dependent world disaster, born of fossil fuels. Coal with all his power, then oils of liquid gold, bringing man enlightenment, we paid as we were told. The tip of this predicament, the truth lies deeper still. Satellites and telephone lines, a web of spies concealed. And in the hearts of darkness, a plan has been conceived. Every hacker, a gun for hire, programmers, a pack of bees. Even plants, where atoms split, depend on the status quo. Tangled in a net of wires, demand the current's flow. And thus, electric impulse feeds silicon and chips, and all it takes is a cyber bomb to put an end to it.
Yeah.
And that's that one. And we're going to find something. The lights will go out at some point in time, and they're going to say, what happened, what happened, what happened? And Homeland Security, of course, is not going to tell us anything because they want to keep us in the dark, literally and figuratively.
Have you thought about how big oil's used for using solar panel breakthroughs? If we want to increase something, we still are using accessing oil to do it. There's an article like that in The Mind Unleashed, and so we still, even though that's renewable energy, it's still dependent on the petroleum infrastructure.
Right. And that's the thing about it. I mean, they're going to find ways to utilize what they have, their commodity, their resource, as long as they've got that corralled and they've got that to where they can use it for something. And we don't realize how much stuff is made from plastic. Well, the majority of plastic is made from a petroleum base.
Plastic.
It's everywhere. It's in everything. So, you know, we're drunk on you know, having access to all this stuff and just thinking that it's just the most wonderful thing. But it's a tricky thing, this balancing and the use of resources and stuff. If we would use one resource to perpetuate something, something else, but at a minimal kind of in a minimalistic kind of a way, with the trade-off, one thing good as opposed to another thing not so good, it's a tricky business. If they can sell oil in barrels just as it comes pumped out of the ground, they're going to do that as much as possible. If they're going to sell oil in plastic forks and knives for your picnic, that's another thing altogether. They're deciding, somebody's deciding somewhere online how this oil is going to be used. And if we can make it to be used for things that would sustain us beyond the oil, such as the solar paneling, those arrays and that sort of thing, and then that would perpetuate something later on down the line, that would probably be a better deal than just putting it in our cars and burning it up, or putting it in our generators or whatever else we'll be using to generate electricity, and this, that, and the other. But it's a tricky business.
Everybody's, don't forget about the development of weapons.
Yeah, And the military basically runs on oil, too, by the way. All the tanks and all the jeeps and all the planes and everything, that's all fuel-based. That's all petroleum-based. So if we have a certain surplus, which they're saying now we do, have a surplus of oil, which is driving prices down all over the place, and what a wonderful thing it is. And do you know where that surplus came from? The fracking industry. And so everybody's going, oh, what a good thing this fracking is. We've got more oil than we know what to do it with now, and the prices are actually
San Benito County just voted it down.
Good. And that's the thing, is they're causing more damage than good in what they're doing. And it's like people don't understand it. All they understand is that, gas is cheaper at the gas station. And that's the way they have us. That's how they keep us hooked on it, is by periodically throwing more oil onto the market than what we need, so that the price actually goes down. It's supply and demand, right? If you have a bunch of people that need it, that's your supply, or that's your demand, and you got a bunch of people digging it, that's the supply. Well, the OPEC people, the oil industry around the world, has to compete with that, because the United States right now is having a glut of oil, supposedly. But I have in my mind, this is all future stuff. This is all stock market talk. We say we're going to have more oil than other people, and therefore we can drive the prices down. It won't be as expensive. But the reality of this situation is that oil is not in anywhere. It's not like it's been put in tanks and it's being held in storage. It's not at all. And yet we think that that's what's happened, that we have more oil than we know what to do with. That's not true. There are more oil to be had through fracking, and therefore that is what's driving the prices down, not the oil that we actually have out of the ground right now. So for people to get all excited about it, oh, geez, we're not running out of oil, we've got plenty of oil. Well, that's not true at all. It's not true at all. And the damage to the environment by the fracking is recorded, it's documented. It basically ruins the substrata of the planet just underneath the surface. And everything that they use to pump that oil out, to force that oil out, goes into... at some level into the water base, into the water tables. And so everybody that's using water from the ground and from wells, basically, is eventually going to be sucking these chemicals into those wells, and it's going to contaminate them at some point in time. And it has already. I think Ohio is one of the states that's been allowing a lot of fracking and stuff, and they're starting to have problems with their drinking water. So, you know, unless you figure that you're going to get enough water for everybody to drink from the rain and from the rivers and that sort of thing, then it's all well and good. But as California knows, that doesn't always happen, does it? You don't always get the rain that we think we're supposed to get. And so when you're in a drought, guess what? You dig deep for that water. You go down into the wells and stuff. And if it's I know California's doing some fracking, so sooner or later they're going to run into that problem where it's polluted that much more of their water base. So people are funny that way. We're easily convinced that somebody has the solution to the problem. But it is trade-offs in a lot of ways. You know, if we want one thing, we gotta let go of something else. So how to do that? That's the whole thing. So
do we need fracking to make weapons? Do you think?
Anything that's oil-based, a lot of the weapons that they're putting out now have plastic in them. Even the rifles and guns have plastic in them nowadays. The bombs, not so much. I mean, you know, if we want to shoot bombs, but if we do planes, aircraft and that sort of thing, a lot of the stuff in a lot of vehicles, in order to lighten them up, they'll put armor plating on certain places, but they'll put plastic and other things. So you know, it's part of what we're using to make the weaponry, for sure.
So the arms industry works with oil companies to extract resources for free.
Hand in hand, this is the military industrial base. This is what our country is based on. Our economy is based on. If there are no wars, we can't make munitions. We can't make airplanes and tanks and armored vehicles. It's basically how we're sustaining ourselves, because we've taken everything else and given it off to the Chinese or the Indians or somebody else to do for us. And so, you know, the things we maintain here at home, and I don't want to pick out a state in particular, but I'd say Texas probably is about the biggest example of this, is geared towards maintaining the military at a very high level. Of course, I guess there's Boeing and those people too that do the aircraft. Those are Lockheed is out there. He does some stuff in California. But these places are based on the contingency that if there is no war, there is no profit, there is no money to be made, and so there has to be war created in order for war to be sustained. I understand
they
that
have
the
to
Russians
practice.
The Russians are now flying on a regular basis over parts of the Ukraine that were questionably in their, you know, purview or not. But they're now flying their missions, their routine missions, and we're chasing them back from the borders with our planes. So eventually there'll be a conflict there that we can jump back into if we want it. And that's the thing. We time and we play with the idea of war at any given point in time. We're doing the same thing in Libya or wherever we're running the ISIS group out. And it's just an excuse for us being there and us using our war materials, our planes at this point.
The arms of the oil industries work with much of the mass media, and that lies and confuses the public. So, public addicted to cheap gas, they seem to gobble up all these lies, because how can we just let go of using what we're used to?
It's all about who you're going to trust. That's exactly right. Who you're going to trust? You're going to trust a person who may be a scientist who says, "Look, this is going to be a limited fuel, and we need to get off this and get on something else fairly quickly." Or are you going to listen to somebody who says, "Oh, we have an unlimited supply, and life is good. All we have to do is protect our interests around the world." And then protecting our interests around the world is all about the military and the military-industrial complex. Let me get back to the book. I have another poem in here that I had marked. Where did I put it? It's in the same chapter. This book is interesting because I kind of did it chapters in a poetry book, which is kind of unusual, but I thought each section should have, you know, a little bit of a different content. The first section was called "Timing is Everything," and it's more autobiographical kinds of things. Then you got snippets of a twisted reality, which is several poems about just little humorous kinds of things that I like to talk about. And we had road trips, maps, and unexpected destinations, which is section three, which was written for things where I like to travel, or I like to travel in my mind as much as anything. And then section four was bent, twisted, and broken. And excuse me. And believe it or not, that's more political than anything else. And that's where I'm getting several of these poems. Okay, let's see, which one was I going for? here it is. 158. Okay. There's like 84 poems in this book. This poem is called "Revolution or Resignation." And basically, it is talking about our social status and how we are not seeing the kind of inner conflict in this country that we should be seeing. It's kind of been hid again by the media, who wants to make everything happy and healthy and looking like it's all good. You know.
Okay.
All right. Revolution or Resignation is what this poem is called. And I have a thing at the top that says pop, pop, and that equals gunshots. One, battle lines drawn in anticipation, inner city insurgents, smoke signal strategists, prejudice practiced, paranoia perfected. Pop, pop. Peace, check with me next week. It's all about clenched fists, babies baptized by war, sons and daughters dreaming in hate, sticks and stones, bitter roots and jealous bones, breaking, colors running together, then apart. Are you in or out? Two, butcher knives, kitchen cupboard ammo dumps, camouflaged, militant intent, domestic violence, no safety on the trigger, finger, festering anger with cold cuts served raw and bleeding, while bigotry and apathy, poverty and ignorance suckle their babes, and PG-13 is out roaming the streets. Pop, pop. I dare you to do that again. Fear and frustration make for infectious ingredients. Homeland Security, be all you can be. My country, tis of thee. Are you a patriot? Is he? Is she? Did you pledge your allegiance to the almighty bank, keeper of homes, of schools, and black SUVs? Hello, sweet feudalism. Farewell, frail democracy. In sugar-coated dreams, spoon-fed by high-definition, split-screen, flat-monitor, color TVs, corporate conspirators persistently replace sustenance with us or them, you or me. Hunger is ignored as starving minds search for ways to settle the score. Pop, pop. You up with that? Multiple convictions. Don't know whose rules rule. State versus Fed versus Johnny Appleseed. Radical right over subjugated wrong. Sentencing institutions imprisoning minds while convicts insist on something better than cardboard shotguns, stop and rob jobs, and bunny bread lives. America hides between microscopic movements and fixed elections. She leaves us falling, dropping out in preparation. Four, jets and flak jacket pawns attack problems without resolution. Armor-piercing colonialism handed me down. Fragmentary missiles and misguided smart bombs exude shock and awe. Pick a fight, pick a foe. Our nation, right or wrong, we are the champions, no matter the cost or the collateral damage done. And all in the name of God, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Only one truth we'll know for certain. Today, terror unites a divided nation, sends us down a desert highway. Suicide bombers and vulture drones blend into various landscapes, patiently awaiting orders. Pop, pop. You can't have it. It's mine. It's mine. Battle lines drawn in anticipation, revolution or resignation. Fanatical factions take center stage. Patrols are sweeping our cities, our streets, our homes, our lives. Change.
Very cool. Take a music break right now. This is I'm gonna get back to you. Sorry.
broken ankle. Cross your fingers, then you cross the void. Wings of angels, say a prayer for all the girls and boys. Come together, paint to pleasure. Noise to music, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, yeah. Close the circle, arms around a beating heart. Hope injected, giving love another place to start. Come together, lace to leather.
Daisies. That was Mike True. We've got Mike True right here.
Hey,
I'm
hey.
Talking. And he was about to discuss his poem, his poetry, yes.
Because of poetry. Yeah, some of the poems from my my book, Diabolical Seas, which, to put a plug on that, can be found on Amazon. And if you're in the New Orleans area, at many of the local bookstores. So, yeah. So politics and poetry have gone together since, you know, time immemorial. I think even Homer and the Iliad was a little bit politically oriented, right? In the Odyssey, you know, they were talking about the kings and queens and whoever was in power and trying to figure out who should be in power and, you know, all the heroes and heroines and that sort of thing. But anyway, So it's a noble thing, I think, to describe some of my poetry as political works as much as anything else. Let me see here. I have another poem that I wanted to read, and I appreciate you letting me do this. And it's called "We Have This Problem." And I was listening to a musical group called These United States a couple of years back when I wrote this. And These United States was just a local small band that was on Reverb Nation. And they had a song called "The Park." And don't ask me why, but they had a phrase in it that says, "We have this problem." And it was talking a little bit political, too, but I wrote this poem just based on the idea, "We have this problem." Anyway, it goes like this. We have this problem. We keep searching for a savior, a leader bold and decisive, someone to keep the wolves at bay, to chase the tears and fears that stain our cheeks, the rage that stays inside our lungs, inside our broken hearts. We look for someone unafraid, someone we think we know, someone who knows the way to put their best foot forward, push past the great disasters, to take us to that next big step, that ray of hope, that long and winding road that leads us to prosperity and peace. We have this problem. We think everything's important. We leave no detail undotted, no decisions left to crossing T's. We know what's on the shopping list. We know what makes us happy. We seek the safe majority. The choice is so much easier. Decisions we can count on. We are here like a butterfly, overwhelmed and underfunded. We barely hear the melody, though we recognize the dance. We have this problem. Everyone is trying to shape the future, bend it like a bumper, forged for our protection. Trepidation drips like sweat, stings the eyes and blurs the vision. We insist the Constitution. We demand that declaration. Shift uncomfortably in our lawn chairs, then flip the bird in protest. Red and blue will vote tomorrow. Desire is in the looking glass. Yet we are shaken in reflection. We kiss the rabbit's foot for luck, drink the magic potion. 5 more hours of energy as they strip us of our nation. We have nothing in our backpacks but holy books and bombs. We have this problem. We are living in a prism, this place where light is splintered. We pick our favorite color, each certain of exclusivity, of our own unique perspective, the lone tint staining everything for one more generation. We say we'll stand for something like lines of armored officers, batons that beat like war drums, like tear gas in our city streets. We choke on our confusion, confronted by the answers, the questions long forgotten, in a world no longer ours to keep. We have this problem. We bear optimism like a burden, like oceans on our shoulders, like a sweatshop down in Bangladesh, like a pipeline through Afghanistan, like a Calvin Klein commercial on a Chinese television, the one you bought at Walmart and brought out to the patio with the burgers and the beer. We have this problem. Trapped in backyard fantasies, we are eating watermelon. We are jonesing for the weekend. We are praying for the motherland. We are drinking in the atmosphere while the boombox drowns our thinking and all the tricks unheard of are sprinkling like bad water upon the neighbor's lawn. We have this problem. We can't think of any living person, no name that we can count on, no, not one, not one who can be trusted, not one who might be pure of heart. Diogenes, one honest man, the last daydreamer, nowhere to be found. And all along we're thinking, someone should be wiser, yes, one would be enough. Then, like a great epiphany born of pre-apocalyptic notions taught in post-traumatic institutions, we see no other than ourselves. We have this problem. Awash in revelations, we stay the revolution, shrug in resignation, embrace the insecurity, let go of the dire predicaments that rip from sea to sea. And in our stoic stasis, we linger by the finish line. We stand waiting for the fireworks, unaware of what will happen next, simply happy to be living in this land of the brave, in this home of the free.
Mm-hmm. We have no other but ourselves.
Other than ourselves. And that's what it is. Everybody is so fixed on, I mean, and this is our society in general. It's me. It's all about what I'm doing right now. My selfie on Facebook or whatever. You know, it's like so we have a hard time thinking in terms of who could lead a group of people towards a better world.
I think artists and musicians can. Well, obviously, the movie industry does.
We're a little bit more mentally liberated, I guess. Being that I don't want to use the word antisocial, but we may not be quite as tuned in to the regular day to day as a lot of other people are. I guess dropping out, turning off. Tune in, turn on, and drop out. And that was a big phrase back.
Yeah,
in
I have a couple of friends who've done that. Recently, but they still have political leanings, but they don't have to expose themselves and get ripped off and get their brains, you know, destroyed. Just, they can think on their own. They just aren't going to be they're not going to be affected as much by society because they've dropped out of it.
Yeah, except for the fact that now we are coming up with this, and I don't know. I watch a little bit of television, and one of the shows that's on is called Person of Interest. And of course, it's just a cops and robbers, good guy and bad guy thing. But it's all about these computers that are watching our every move, and that they know if we're about to plot some evil deed or not, and then it becomes the government's job to either step in or ignore the situation. So we are becoming more watched, more closely watched as a group, and therefore herded as a group in various directions.
We're watching other people trying to watch us. It's just this repetitive recycling. It's really kind of undecipherable. What you could even is it really happening, or are we just creating it?
So we've got to be careful though, because if we started being a face on Facebook, if we started getting our social media out there on Twitter and this, that, and the other, and then we decide that things aren't going the way we want them to, and so we kind of disappear, we stop posting, we stop doing these things, kind of just to fade back away again.
Then what?
Is that going to be noticed as much as if you're there chattering away?
I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. They might have an algorithm out there somewhere that goes, watch out for the ones that kind of disappear. See where they go. See what they're up to now. You know? So that's part of the...
That's really paranoid. No.
It is. You can get real paranoid real quick. That's the other thing, too. Yeah. I think the whole poem that started this a couple weeks ago was a poem that I had written in a state of paranoia about how it was too peaceful to not be, you know, something going on. So... It's funny that way. Yeah. Life goes on that way.
Well,
so what do you think about it? I'm gonna switch up gears. Is anything good happened as a result of Jerry Brown continuing his reign in California?
Oh, who knows? Just that people probably, you know, it hasn't affected the national politics any.
Right. Of course.
We have a drought. He's in charge of that. Did you know that the Central Valley looks like the Sahara? It looks like the the other desert, Mojave.
Yeah, no doubt that.
And the other place got more rain than usual. Like where, I guess the Mojave got more rain, and the Central Valley looks like it. Like. Now, that's what I was told, that somebody's traveled to these places and said it's really dry, and that, away from there, I think the Mojave got more rain. So it's really switched around. It's sort of we're beyond the tipping point and everything's coming downhill now. And we're just sliding through it. I mean, I could be... I don't want to be positive about creativity and beauty and bliss, or but for actuality, because of the way the planet has done itself, people have watched this happen, let it happen. We have how many billion people now? 7 or so, and we're probably getting more as we speak. They just keep coming, but people keep dying because you can't control all this. It's just so I don't see how it's going to be helpful to do a whole lot of changing in terms of political maneuvers and climate change, climate kinds of practices. I don't know if there's any time left to really make an impact and create more. Maybe we need to do more internally. Peace comes from within, and just be cool with your surroundings and your families, your friends, and the communities where you serve or where you live, and try to make that work out for yourself, and so that everybody, if you can change yourself, that's one good step into changing the rest of the place. And all you can do is affect those around, close to you, in your immediate vicinity. So we've got like 4 minutes left. So why don't you think of something to say?
That's you're right on it there. That's exactly what's going on. The biggest problem we have in the world now is there's too many of us, and just like any other species that's been on the planet's face before us, if you get too many of any one thing, it throws the balance off, and you can't. I mean, you and I personally can't change that. We can't say, oh, geez, 7 billion, that's too many. Let's just make it 5 next week. You can't do that. So the reality of the situation is things are pretty much out of our hand. We don't need to fear that. We need to do exactly what you were saying. And this is what I kind of preach this around. I'm not a preacher, but when I'm hanging out at the coffee house and talking to people.
You're living in the South, man. No.
But we can talk. We can tell people what we think and what's on our minds. And I tell people, like, it's all about your own corner. You make your neighborhood, your little area, as best as you can, and get the people there thinking in terms of doing good things in that particular community, and the best we can for the kids as far as the school systems, as best we can for the people in terms of the safety from the with the police and working with some kind of a system that protects us, and bringing in things to that area that are sustainable, good food, healthy food, which is a struggle in New Orleans. Actually, you're talking about the South. We have to import just about everything that comes into this town. It's below water level, so nothing really grows here. We're dependent on other people, but to get the places like Walmart and those places to bring in organic food as opposed to stuff that's GMO or mass produced or whatever, and not so good for us, is a matter of literally writing or emailing or sending, doing some kind of protest if we have to, standing up in front of the place and saying, look, we need this for our community. I don't care what you do anywhere else, but this is what we want. And if we did that more, we would not have control of the world. We would not even have control of our country in terms of what we have and what we don't have. But we would have control of the place in which we live and the place in which we're trying to survive. And that's what needs to be the focus. And if everybody's doing the same thing, then they'll see, we used to call it in the business best practices. You'll see where people have succeeded in making their communities livable and viable and the most people are protected and the most people are given the necessary housing and food and health services and education and then we say, okay, well, how can we make that happen here?
Right, we're going to have to let that be it, except some song you're going to be singing right now. It's just been Mike True, and I enjoyed it.
I don't know. Thanks for having me.
Well, Hold on. Been tuned in to the Tangerine Dream Team Show. Talking about life.
One more magazine before I have to doze. I want one of these, please, just one of them. Hey, hey. Hey, hey. Nothing happened at myself like no tomorrow. It ain't better since I disconnected my telephone. One more mellow melody from the radio alone. One more sad song, say I'll miss you when I go home. Hey, hey.